Good morning, everyone. My name's Stephen Boyd. It says I'm an IT security advisor there. That's fine. That's what the business card says on that side. If I had my choice, it would say open source evangelist or something on the back. There's a tiny bit of stuff about security in my presentation, but I'm really going to talk about free and open source software in the Commonwealth. Everything I say is my own personal opinion. It's not that of the Department or the Commonwealth, except where the slides actually say it's Commonwealth policy. So how are we going? You know, 3 minutes or 1 minute? Okay. Quick introduction to the Department of the Environment, Water, Heritage and the Arts. That's the fourth name I think it's had since I started about 8 years ago. That's normal for government agencies. They have these things called changes of government to keep the democracy working, and usually the politicians shuffle things around. In the last couple of changes, we've gone and doubled the size of our department, roughly, despite losing a piece that's now called the Department of Climate Change. So we've had a lot of change in the department, and that ripples through to ICT. It's really interesting working when you've got such a diverse range of people, and that has effects on computing. There's not too many places that have everything from nuclear physicists to park rangers to artists, who are a different kettle of fish really to everything else, to people who do policy. We have all of those in the agency. We're geographically dispersed. We've got our network on various islands, Norfolk Island, Christmas Island, Cocos Island. We've got people down south, as they call it from here, in Antarctica. Not on my network directly, but they do have connectivity through it if they need it. So it's very, very diverse and an interesting place. We do use free and open source software, and we'll talk about that. That's really what I'm about. Rebooting. Okay. We had an interesting discussion here before the keynote with a couple of my colleagues. Should I use free software to do everything, or should I use that other operating system? This video might work better. Then again, it might not. Which I was talking about. No, you're right. That one. That'll do. So let's set the stage. We've got a government department. We've got lots of diverse things. We run primarily what most government departments do: Windows on a desktop, a little bit of open source on the desktop, and quite a bit in the background. Right, Linux on the desktop. How many people here use Linux as their primary or sole desktop operating? Good, we've got the majority of the room. I've tried to do it at work. For a while I would go for several days before I had to go back. The question was why? There's many examples of people who do it, but what's stopping us in government? That's the whole topic we're going to talk about. I'll stand up here. Okay, as we said, the general agencies, Microsoft, probably XP still, a few places I think have got Vista, but mostly there, and Office and Outlook and Exchange. There are some agencies that don't use Outlook and Exchange, they use Lotus Notes. There are a few people who use other things, but the majority is a just straight Microsoft environment. We moved to that a few years ago from having some Novell things in there, and it was interesting because when we had Novell stuff for a little while, I could actually use the desktop because there was a group-wise support for it for a little while, and everything worked more or less. Some agencies have got pockets of either OS X. Usually they're graphics type people. Sometimes they've got Linux on their main network. We've got a couple of Linux desktops got a bunch of Macs that are not on the network. They're on their own ADSL connected thing. Most open source usage, free software usage in government at the moment is in the back end stuff. In our case, we've got it on our public web servers. Email would stop flowing in and out of the network if you turned off all the open source there, because there's a couple of appliances that do that, and then a couple of other processors as well running free software. The web content filtering for people going out so they don't go to bad sites and we can monitor them. That runs on open source, it's a Linux appliance again. Main database server internally runs Red Hat. The database is not free, it's Oracle, but some of the other stuff on there is free software. The help desk that we use internally for some things, that's RT. Again, free software, and as I said, we've got a couple of Linux desktops. There's system administrators who use it. Ajumay ran a survey. P&O knows a little bit more about that because she was involved in that a couple of years ago. A couple of the findings that were pointed out to me, 86% of the agencies who responded, and it was a reasonably high response rate, so fairly indicative of the Commonwealth, they've got a positive view of free and open source software and expect the usage to increase over time. So that's a few years ago. Presumably it's a high usage now. The decisions are based on functionality rather than cost. So people are making a decision on what they, how they deploy things, on the thing that matters, how things function, can we actually do what we want, need to do. And functionality is usually dictated in the end by our legislative requirements to either do something for the minister and the parliament or for the public. I've mentioned government policy. It hasn't really changed in the last few years. There was a publication there launched at the same time as LCA in Canberra. It really talks about informed neutrality. So whether you're going to use free software or proprietary products, the decision is based on, should be based on functionality or value for money. Ajumay believe that their role is to provide information about the alternative. So that publication is very good. It provides a lot of that the background to start with. There's a web reference there for people who want to go and look at the thing and download it. Now, what are the reasons for the poorest being in that situation at the moment? First one, aversion to change. People are comfortable with what they're comfortable with. Generally, the changes they want are to remove the little niggling annoyances, not major change. If we use the Microsoft world as an example, the vast majority of people are happy with what came out when they stabilised XP. They don't want to change particularly. That's true of people doing things as well. They like systems that don't change except to give little slight improvements. Lack of knowledge. Free software, the things that our ideals, the things that we talked about in this morning's keynote, most senior managers have never heard of those concepts or have got a very, very biased, minimalist view of them. As I say, no one's marketing free and open source desktops, whereas you have big companies marketing the proprietary things to people in all sorts of ways. Yeah, there's a little bit of marketing from Red Hat and a small amount from Novell, but it's generally not saying you can do this replacement here, it will have all these benefits, as much as talking about back-end systems and various things, because that's what people are buying. And there aren't really that many examples for someone to say, oh, it's a safe thing for me to do. Getting the first two or three examples in Australia will be far harder than getting the next 50. For those of you who are not familiar with the term, outsourcing means getting a private company to do what traditionally would have been done by your IT services group internally. The Australian government went through an outsourcing change, I guess is the right word, a bit over a decade ago. When you've got a contract that runs for 5 to 9 years, as the one that we had previously did, it tends to set in place what's going to happen for 5 to 9 years. If you're familiar with contracts, the things that you articulate well in your request for quotes or request for tenders are the things that get optimised in the price. The contractor will make their profit out of all the things that you change. It's true whether you're building a house or doing IT. So if your contract is based on what is basically the status quo a year before the contract, that's what can flow through. The second point there depends on the way the contract is structured, but there's the potential for the supplier to make two streams of revenue, or possibly three streams of revenue, while they're managing the software for you, compared with the single stream of revenue if it was a free and open source situation, because there's then no license fees and no maintenance fees, just support. Applications. Everyone's familiar with Steve Ballmer's developers mantra. Well, developers produce applications, and that's what people use. On our systems, we've got well over 400 desktop applications. I guess between 5 and 10% of those are free and open source things. The rest of them are proprietary of some nature. The difficulty we face would be to move to a Linux desktop, and we're replacing all those applications, or you'd have to have a hybrid desktop, which I think would not save money. It wouldn't be any good for people. It's just one of those areas where you're not there. As I mentioned in the introduction, we're a very diverse department. There are a lot of agencies that are very not at all diverse in our sense. They simply deliver a single service to a group of people and then have a policy and a corporate area that just do corporate services. They would probably find it easier to do this sort of change. I've said we've got bespoke as well as commercial off-the-shelf software. Agencies tend to have to get written specific software to do what they are required to do. Commercial organisations don't manage the EPBC Act, Environmental and Biodiversity. They don't manage some of the other specific things that agencies do. So there isn't the scope to go and buy one off the shelf. You have to write stuff. This software tends to hang around for a long time. Another agency I've dealt with, they've got an application which relies on stuff in Windows that's now no longer supported. It's not the recommended practice in the thing. They've got to keep running the support for that for another 2 or 3 years because they're not scheduled to replace that application or to rebuild it. These are the realities of running complex networks. Many of the things people want are only available at the moment as a Windows application, and further down the chain, people rely on that output and won't or can't accept something as an alternative because their systems work that way. Costs. If you're going to migrate 3,500 people and all their applications, it won't happen overnight and it would be very costly. And it's not just training the users, it's actually getting things to work. That every so often you go in there and you discover that someone's built an application out of some bits and pieces that are really DB macros or something like that, interconnecting to something we only find out about them normally when something goes wrong. They're just things that the users do. So it's non-trivial to do that. What can the free open source community do to change this? The first point there, a single distribution that just works, that doesn't have any issues that cause you to have to go to the command line to kill off, what was it, Rhythm Box, the PHP, those sort of issues you've got to get rid of if we're going to have things. Why do I say a single distribution? Then you might have the suppliers of other software support. Why you've got to have download a table or a .zip or an RPM file or we don't know what, how many places support that? But that's a real issue for the community to think about. I also, the only time I'm talking about security, we need to sell something that we can say is better security. The number of things that have happened very recently in terms of targeted attacks on systems and the ongoing issues with things like IE6 and some of the other proprietary software, that's an opportunity for the free software people to work on. We've got manager access control available in our kernel. We should be turning that on and using it, and the application should know how to use that environment. Documentation. It's really important that people can find out how to use their application. If I was going to be critical of one bit of free software, it's the documentation, if you can find it. And I don't mean man pages. I mean stuff that explains and gives examples and goes beyond the books that you can go half a dozen different versions of how to install Red Hat. Five or six or something or other, or Ubuntu or even Debian, because they all cover the same groundwork again. It's how to install it, how to do the first few things, not how to go beyond that. The rest of the shelves in Borders or Angus and Robertson have got a whole series of books on the next step in that other operating environment, but we don't have it for the free software. Interoperability, and I mentioned a couple of products there. They are the products that are used, and you have to be able to work with them. If your intranet is built around Office and SharePoint, and we don't have a product that just works with it, we can't go and have a mixture of Linux desktops and Windows desktops. It just won't work. People won't be able to do their job. Okay, the question was, isn't it the other way around? Yes, we have the formats that Microsoft particularly use are not as easy to work with as something that's stood the test of time in an open standards environment, but we're the minority. So we have to find ways of doing that. And demonstrably, the community has managed to do an awful lot of that, particularly work with the SAMP people and some of the other lobbying that's been happening over time. But we have to keep going that way. Yes? Okay, so the point was that it's incumbent on us or government particularly, to use open standards. Get to that in a moment. So the point was to summarise that it's possible to set up, particularly SharePoint, so that you can interact with it using free and open source tools, and therefore the point of view expressed was that it's up to the Windows sysadmins to, it should be up to them to set that up. Yes and no. As we progress versions of Microsoft tools, they keep adding functionality, changing things, and I'm not so sure about how easy it would be to take the current versions of Evolution tools and connect to the 2010 stuff. Let's just take that one later in there. I'm going to, the next point there is support for government-only requirements, and I specifically refer to a thing called email protected markings. I'll give you an example of that. The email protected marking standard says we want to put indicators on the email to say it's unclassified or it's got a security classification. I actually logged bugs in Evolution and Thunderbird get that sorted. The responses from the two groups were quite different. Evolution, and we had a little bit of push from vendors in that case. We got part of the way there. There is support there at a technical level to do it. It's just never been finished off and rolled out. And I guess I take some of the blame because I didn't go and get in there and hack it and get it finally fit to work. Thunderbird was far more interesting. Nothing happened for ages and ages. And then I got the email out of their bugzilla that said, we've resolved that ticket. We don't need to do it. You could do it as an add-in. That was the thing. Now, that's unfortunately too illustrative of the community and the problems we've got. There is a... it's quite possible, they're correct, it is quite possible to write an add-in. In fact, one of the agencies I know about wrote their own add-in in a couple of days at work, but it only did that much of the functionality, not the full functionality. The issue is we have to find ways where we can get these sorts of things done, and we have to find a way where the government can make a financial contribution if that's I'm not saying I know how to do it, I'm just saying it's an issue for the community. I totally agree with your point. We want something that works better, that demonstrably works better. We already have some products that do that. Firefox, right? We need to get the whole of everything so it's one platform working better. And I think we're moving that way. We've just got to get there. Now, I'm going to run out of time if we don't keep going. So we'll take the questions at the end, if you don't mind. Okay. This is aimed at what someone in an agency can do and what you, if you're a contractor helping an agency, working with an agency, we've got a plan to do. People need a formal policy about free and open source software to cover off some of the perceived and some of the real risks of using open source software. We want to make it easier, and the way government works, policies make things easier internally. I'll talk with people afterwards about what could go in the policy. I'm just conscious I'm going to run out of time if I don't do that. Ensure options are considered when you're producing proposals or going out to purchase. Actually go and say, you can do this with free software, or you can do this with these commercial offerings, and try and get both considered. Now, the really important point that came up before before. We want to make sure that new systems use open standards for their data, both data at rest and data in motion across the network, and in the communication standards that sit around the data. If we can achieve getting that over the next few years as we move to all this Gov 2.0 functioning, we'll go a long way to being able to isolate out applications from data and to say it doesn't matter which application you use, the data has got a standard. And I think that's the area where we have the most opportunity in the whole thing. Simply use free open source applications whenever you can and let people just see you using them. By doing that and talking about why I chose that rather than the alternative, I've convinced people at work to look at free open source software differently. It works. Participating in the community. There's a community of interest. We invite the government people to participate in this. It's just a government group getting together every couple of months, plus an online collaboration. So the government people who are involved can talk to me afterwards, or there's an email address there to participate. That's another way where we'll get things happening. What about the future? There was some comments from, I've forgotten who it was, in Red Hat, and some other people who said, desktop doesn't matter, because we're not going to have a desktop in a while. We're going to have this wonderful thing called cloud computing. Or we're going to have, everyone's going to use these, but I can't use those without my glasses. The clients are changing, and I think that's important, and it will have a huge impact. The simple reason that if you've got different clients, you've got to write accessible applications, or you've got to use open data, or it won't work. I can't look at our corporate intranet on my BlackBerry, because it's in that SharePoint thing. And it's got little issues if you try and use it with Firefox, but it generally works, unless go into the bits and need an ActiveX control. They're the things that we need to change. I've also mentioned Linux as thin clients. Our organisation is trying to save greenhouse gases and minimise energy use. And one of the changes we're going to try and make is go to thin clients. And that actually gives us a lot of opportunity, because the thin client can connect to multiple backends. Have it, and the backends will be virtualized, so it's very easy to add a Linux desktop instead of that other one, or as well as that other one. So there is a lot of opportunity there for us to get these changes happening. That's really it. We've got about 3 minutes to lunch. Questions? Up the back. Yeah, no way. We need the microphone
makes it easier.
On the video.
Hi. You got me there? Yeah. I've been working since about the mid-90s, well, mid to late 90s, with free and open source software, and also with and for the public sector. And quite honestly, you know, I think we could have a fascinating debate about the ins and outs and all the sort of the tactical maneuvers that we could make to improve access to information, which after all is the real goal, and, you know, improving FOSS, the use, you know, the uptake of FOSS. But I'm amazed that even after this long, we're still not having the policy discussion. And I don't think, honestly, in my experience anyway, that you can really get anything more than small tactical gains without having the policy discussion. I don't want to share too much appropriate too much of the hard work that's gone in the decades before, but this is a little bit like the women's movement in the 1960s and 70s, when there were a few lone voices who were saying, you know, yes, you know, we do have to deal with the day-to-day stuff, and it's very, very important. But you still have to say we're equal. And I don't think that point is being it's being dealt with much. This is all quite, it's very, very much in the forefront for me, because I've been living for the last several years in Vanuatu and watching the same sort of policies happen. We're in the process of liberalizing the telecoms market, of changing government, implementing a national government network. And so, needless to say, there are a few of us who are jumping in there and really, really trying to get at it. But I'd be really interested in hearing what people here have to say and what you have to say about steps that can be taken on the policy front that, that really get those fundamentals into place.
There was a lightning talk.
I'd rather have questions. That one's just inviting a lot of debate.
Yeah, hi. I'm interested in the slide that we got quite animated over earlier. I found one of the things that was quite interesting is that it almost looked like that slide was structured around the things that we would need to do to sell the choice of a free or open platform over a closed one to an agency. And I say that in the context of being a government agency employee myself, but also being in my free time a free and open source fan. And I've seen it, and I feel like it's not us who should be bending over backwards to show them that this is a better product because it delivers the solution that you want in a better way. It's more about trying to make sure the people within government are aware of the catches of choosing a closed path and the benefits of choosing an open one, and accepting that there might be a small amount of compromise in the features and the bling that the big corporates out there want to sell. Like you say, with the standards and the SharePoint and the new features, that I don't feel like, I agree, it should not be the free and open source world chasing reverse engineering the compatibility. From your perspective within the government organisation, how do you see agencies and the people who are actually the decision makers in the agencies? On one side, they've got people selling them brand new features, and on the other side, you've got people saying you don't need quite as much bling, you need to be better at adhering to open standards. What's your take on that? Because the people who make the decisions are not the people who actually have the technical nous most of the time.
So it's very difficult to speak for the people who make decisions. I can only speak in very defined, very small context. The decisions tend to be made at a very high level, unless there's a bubbling up. Some just go with what they know, and that's generally go with the status quo. And that's really the thrust of what I'm saying. We have to do that bubble up of information, and just demonstrating that what we're saying with hard facts and good examples. And the issues with locked-in data are very real. I've had in another. Government, a different agency, we had a supplier who contractually was supposed to provide code in a scrope. They never did. The risks of losing that code are real, and there are examples of people should find those examples and preferably in their own agency or another agency that they deal with all the time, and show those managers, because that's the telling people about those risks is really useful.
My experience, governments like talking to governments. I wonder if you contrast the Australian government's approach with what the German government do. And the German government will fund directly things like enhancements in the KDE project. And maybe if you could get the Australian government talking to the right people in the German government, it might be better than listening to a bunch of long-haired layabouts like us, basically.
The issue is the Australian government talking to other governments. I'm sure that does happen. It's not through my agency, it's through AGAMO. But the Australian Government Information Management Office has that responsibility. And there is there are people in there who do understand things. And the example I gave you of that policy shows how much they really do understand. That they do, it's just taking time and work.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much for those insights. This is It's always interesting how we treat our own, isn't it, when they give us a message that we're not necessarily happy to hear. What really struck me, and this is a conversation that's going to carry on tomorrow, I'm giving a talk on a project that the New Zealand Open Source Society has been running with about 14 New Zealand government agencies to really look under the hoods of some of these issues that Stephen was talking about today, because they're really important. What fundamentally strikes me about the situation, and I think it's what we find so upsetting in this room, is that by the sounds of it, Stephen's agency is not in control of its own destiny and not in its control of its own IT. And that should be a big concern to us as citizens and as voters and particularly as taxpayers. So I'm very keen for this sort of conversation to keep going throughout this conference. I know it's not a technical conversation.
We are in control of our IT and our destiny, right? We do have that level of control. But there is the IT that we have is a mixture of the decisions that the current and previous management have made over a period of time, and that's there. We
Yeah, sorry, I must have misunderstood your desire to integrate with Outlook and SharePoint and so on that you said you couldn't do. It is a contentious topic, and it's one that we should keep going, because if we're not listening to what Stephen's telling us, then we're not really going to get very far. So thank you, Stephen, and let's keep the conversation going.